Hey, I'm Tony Moreland, and this is the Samsung Developers Podcast, where we chat with innovators using Samsung technologies, award-winning app developers and designers, as well as insiders working on the latest Samsung tools. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 1. On today's show, I'm joined by Eric Krause, Global Head of Marketing for the League of Legends Group at Riot Games. Not only do we chat about the latest success around Wild Rift, their award-winning mobile game for the League of Legends franchise, but also Riot Games' unique process for game development and how diversity and inclusion play an important part of Riot's culture internally and within the gaming and entertainment communities. Oh yeah, and all of the music you'll hear in today's episode, it's from the Wild Rift soundtrack. Enjoy.
Hey Eric, I want to welcome you to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Who is Eric Krause?
Good question. My wife, I think, is asking the same question. I am German, so by my accent, you might be like, where is he from? So I'm super passionate about gaming. I'm really trying to be part of, making people feel better to be a gamer all around the world. But beyond that, really love technology. Talking about anything technology. So that's why I'm super excited to be here talking about, partnership with Samsung, because Samsung is known for technology, but also love cars. So I'm very stereotypical German in that way, because I also really love football. And I mean real football, not the American football thing.
No, I appreciate that they did bring the MLS to the US for all of the soccer fans here. But yeah, I can only imagine you're probably a big fan of the European leagues.
Yes, I still wake up early in the morning and watch some of the games, the good ones in Europe, still live. It's an addiction, maybe. I don't know, but it's a good one.
So what is your team? What team do you follow?
Being German, I have to go with a German team. So that's Borussia Dortmund now. Second place, unfortunately, right behind Bayern Munich. But maybe this year, maybe we have a chance. I'm cheering on. I'm going to sit there with my jersey on when they play. And I have a small figurine that is like dressed up as a Borussia Dortmund character. And depending on how they play, that the figure is allowed to look into the living room. Or if they play badly, they have to turn around and then just stare at the wall. It's kind of you didn't do well, so go into the corner.
So what is the current state? Is he looking positive and into the future, or is he in a timeout?
It just turned around, actually, because two matches ago they lost, so they had to turn around. But the last one they actually won, so it's allowed to look back into the living room. Yes.
Nice. So Riot Games, you are global head of marketing for League of Legends. Tell me, what exactly is that role?
Yeah, so in that role, I have the pleasure of overseeing all the amazing teams that do all the crazy and awesome marketing work across League of Legends on PC and Wild Rift, which is the mobile version of League of Legends. And we've kind of created this as a group because it's kind of the core of League of Legends, and that's how people perceive it. And it's actually very similar in terms of what we're trying to promise to players, right? In terms of, hey, if you play this type of game, this is what you will get out of it in this time. Ultra competition, right? And that is kind of the whole purpose of that group, to really defining, what does that competitive aspect of League of Legends look like? What does it mean to, build a platform ecosystem that's built around celebrating mastery?
Sure.
Right? But also through League of Legends, a lot of people do get to know our characters and our champions that they know and love. So we're also taking care of that, right? Making sure that, as our fans, have their champions that they really cheer on, to give them as much love as possible for the champion that they love. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. It's a huge, huge community. How long have you been in that role at Riot Games?
Fairly recently, actually. I was given that role last summer. And before that, I was actually leading up the marketing team that launched Wild Rift. So
okay.
Moved from that role into this newer role that started to exist as of last summer.
Got it. And you've been at Riot Games for how long?
For over 5 years. And it's so weird because I always think of myself as somebody who's fairly new to Riot.
Sure.
But when I now meet new Rioters, they're like, oh, we've been there over 5 years. You're a veteran. And then deep myself, I'm like, no, don't say that to me. That's not true. I feel like I just joined yesterday. But yeah, apparently it's over 5 years.
Wow. No, but you are originally from Germany. So there has to be some sort of journey that's led you from your home country of Germany to, I understand, you now live in Southern California.
Yeah, right now I do live in sunny Los Angeles. And the passion for gaming eventually, you know, moved me over here. Because at the beginning, during college, I started to work for an agency that was working with EA back in the time. And through that, I became a community manager, becoming kind of the face and the local go-to person for various games and franchises that EA had in Central Europe. And eventually, through that work, EA was like, well, can't you just move over to the West Coast? Because you're working with all those teams already, and you're flying over so many times.
Sure.
Just move. Just come over. And I did that. And that was more than 10 years ago at this point,
wow.
Where I moved to Los Angeles. And yeah, from there, kept working for a couple more years at EA, working on things like Mass Effect, Command & Conquer, and others. And I moved on, actually, to a Korean company, also in gaming, which gave me a new side of learning about like free-to-play and live service operations, which obviously is a big part now of gaming. And then eventually that led me to working at Riot, which, as we said, is more than 5 years ago, which is crazy to say.
Wow. Now, Riot got their start back in the 2000s, correct?
2006, yeah, as tiny startup, just with an idea. And, sure. And now it's like, it's so obvious, but back then it wasn't.
Yeah, because I know back in the early 2000s, you know, when gaming really started, you know, becoming extremely popular, gamers were kind of looked upon as, yeah, this is just like this little hobby and you know, go spend your free time. But I mean, with esports, it has just blown up over the years.
Yeah, totally. And I can proudly say that we're part of that, right? Because we believed in it, and we actually spent ridiculous amounts of effort to really promote and build up, right, the professional esports circuit around League of Legends.
Sure.
And when we did that originally, which is also now more 10 years ago, people laughed on us, right? They're like, what is this? Like, this is not a sport, right? Like, it's just for people in the basement, right? Like, doing these things. And now you look at it and you're like, yeah, if we look at our world championship, right, it has more viewers than most sporting events that Americans know and love, like NBA finals. We have more viewers than the NBA finals, right?
That's so crazy.
It has come a long, long way since then.
So League of Legends, they got their start around 2009. Is that right?
The first version of the game came out 2009 because over the years it has changed drastically for the better. If you look up clips of the original League of Legends from 2009, it's pretty rough. But again, it was 2009. You know, that's the beauty of live services and also being really player focused, right? Is that the game has come a long way. Not because, you know, we necessarily had the most grandest vision for it, but because once you put something out there, right, your players will tell you, well, we like this, we don't like that. And we just kept listening. And that's kind of our thing. Like, we'll keep listening and evolve the game, you know, based on how our players really think, you know, what they believe is best. Right?
League of Legends has become a franchise. And I know there's a whole bunch of games that have come out of that. Talk a bit about some of those individual League of Legends games.
If we're talking about the games and talking about the ecosystem behind it, I think it's important to understand why. What motivates us really is to create that ecosystem that allows people to express fandom very differently.
Okay.
Because right now, you know, as we all human beings, we all have different ways in how we play, right? How we consume entertainment, right? So we wanted to build something, a large ecosystem that people can be really proud of, because it's not just forcing them to play one game to remain to be a fan of this thing that they might have started playing 8-10 years ago. But no, there are all these other different ways that, depending on how their life changes, how their interest changes, how their new friends might play different things or
sure.
want to be entertainment and things. We want to build them an ecosystem that they can be proud of. And that's how we started to be like, okay, part of that is not only to make music and TV shows and whatnot, but it's also making more games, right? And through that lens, we actually announced a bunch of them during the 10th year anniversary of League of Legends, which was a big surprise for people and a good surprise. And there we announced a bunch of games ranging from like Legends of Runeterra, which is, you know, a card game that, we made, a digital card game. Then also TFT, Teamfight Tactics, which is this auto battler genre, which is a new upcoming one, which is really kind of chess meets, you know, game strategy put on top of it. It's really, really weird one. But if you really love strategy, like that one is for you. But we also announced brand new things through the lens of, you know, working with indie companies to really make games that are go really deep into a very specific area that Riot probably wouldn't make through our Riot Forge label. And those have been received pretty phenomenal as well. And last but not least, we also announced our first new IP, which is Valorant, which we've launched now as well, which is right now our first-person tactical shooter.
It's really interesting. So you've got this franchise and you found all these different ways for different types of personalities to engage in the game. So, you know, from Runeterra being that collective card game, it's similar to something like Magic the Gathering, but in a yeah. digital format. And then what I love to hear about is how, you know, you're looking at the mobile space, creating a game to be played on mobile devices. And that's where Samsung kind of comes into play with the game Wild Rift. So I love seeing how, you know, you've taken this single game League of Legends and turned it into a franchise to really expand the community and in the different ways that people can play and interact.
Part of it, right, as we think about all these new games, has been mobile. I mean, I'm actually pretty committed to mobile because, I mean, Wild Rift is one that is built natively for mobile, which was one of the really big challenges for us. But also as we thought about some of our other games, like Legends of Runeterra, Teamfight Tactics, they all have a mobile component of it too. So you can actually play it on a mobile phone as well. Because that's where, right, if you think about trying to give players what they want, if you think about even today, right, the way people consume entertainment, which I include gaming in, has changed drastically, right? In the earlier days, people really made dedicated time for it. They're like, I'm going to be on a PC Thursday night for 4 hours. You know, I'm going to meet up with all my friends, you know, online, and then we'll just play or spend time on a couch or, you know, really make a block available where I can just watch movies and whatnot. But now it really changed. Right now, you know, the trend that we're seeing that we're trying to lean into is, you know, people just, whenever life gives them a small sliver of time.
Yeah.
In that moment, no matter what the situation is, people want to have the highest quality form of entertainment available to them. No matter if it's on a PC, tablet, TV, mobile phone, right? Truly wherever it is. And that change pushes us as game developers to adopt. In this case, to really embrace mobile. Because it's not just about that trend. It's also, for a lot of people, mobile is kind of the first and maybe even only gaming platform they ever own.
Yeah.
So for us, it's also so important because there are all these hundreds of millions of people all around the world that define who they are as a gamer through the lens of a mobile phone. And we want to be there because we want to show them what it could look like to be a gamer through the lens of Riot, because we really want to make sure that they get the best possible experience. And that's why we've started to embrace mobile. And this took us a really long time, arguably like too long, because it's paired with other beliefs that we have, that we really want to deliver the highest quality form of entertainment. And mobile took us a while to get there. At the beginning, it was like the technology wasn't really there for us to have the capabilities to create these deep and engaging experiences, because we didn't just want to use our IP and, you know, put something on a phone that when people look at it, they're like, wait, what you put on a phone here has nothing to do with the game or the IP I know and love over here. So where's that game, like that gameplay that made that PC game so special? We wanted to make sure that when people pick it up and they're like, hey, this is a League of Legends game, that through the mechanics, to the quality, that they can be like proudly say, yes,
yeah,
this is a League of Legends game. So it took us a little bit longer to get there. But now it's definitely part of how we think about the entertainment world, right? That mobile is a big part and arguably more growing part compared to PC and console.
So last year, Riot Games won a Best of Galaxy Store Award, Best Strategy Game for League of Legends Wild Rift. Tell me, what did it mean to win that award?
I mean, people can't see it right now. I'm still smiling just hearing about it because it's so awesome. to see, and I call it validation, right? Because you can say all day long, right, that, hey, we're trying to, you know, really build the best things possible on a device or on a platform to make players proud. But it's really hard sometimes to quantify that, right, as hundreds and hundreds of people are working on this day in, day out. So when do you know that you're probably on the right track? One part is obviously players will tell you if they're happy or not.
Yeah.
But the other one is also, you know, recognition by the industry. And that's why this actually means so much to us as a team that is working on the game, because it is that signal. I was like, hey, you know, Samsung Galaxy said, you know, this is one of the best games of the year. And that makes us proud. And that's why we not only shared it with, obviously, our fans to make sure that they're like, hey, you know, we won this. Thank you guys all out there.
Yeah.
Who made it ultimately happen, because without players, we wouldn't do these things. But it's also now a very important part of, you know, how we think about the game and trying to recruit people. Because it's also a thing, right? Like, as we all recruit for talent, right? They have so many choices.
Of course.
You know, using it like, hey, this is an award-winning team, definitely helps Riot as well as a company to get more super awesome talent in to make even better experiences down the road. So it's a very important thing for us.
Yeah, you know, I've done a lot of these interviews with past winners. This is the first time that I've heard that a company actually uses that award as a way to entice and encourage, you know, talent to come their way. So Wild Rift is fairly new. When was it actually released?
Wild Rift was released or started to release in fall 2020. And I say started to because what we did is we launched in multiple waves. Right? We started in fall 2020, launching in Southeast Asia, and slowly over the course of time, up to our more recent launch in China, we just did it wave by wave and start to expand the availability of Wild Rift globally.
What's the reason behind that sort of rolling release?
It was more of technical nature, trying to, because you find the balance, right, between when is everything totally ready for a global launch versus, well, we have something we believe in. How fast can we deliver player value?
Yeah.
Right? So finding that balance sometimes is this inner pull between you, because one side, right, really wants to like, don't do it. The other one, like, go, push it out.
Of course. Yeah.
So we decided to do it that way to really, you know, get more player feedback along the way earlier, but also still give them an experience in the earlier stages of the rollout that we still believed in being a good experience for them.
Got it. So it's almost like doing a beta release for software.
Pretty much, yes.
So, you know, knowing that League of Legends was extremely popular on PC, and then you decided to come up with this mobile version, Wild Rift. Tell me about what is the process for building a mobile version game?
It was a long one. You know, we spent several years trying to figure it out, really. And what it led to was rebuild everything. Because the first instinct, right, when you have something that is working on PC is, oh, let's just see what we can port over, right? And sure, we tried, but it didn't feel right. When we want to be on a platform, right, when we want to put a name on one of our games, we want to proudly say that this is the best we can do.
Sure.
That's the best possible experience you can have, right? But just porting it, that didn't feel right because a PC game wasn't made for the different screen. So we decided we'll need to rebuild everything using a different engine, you know, rebuilding all the art assets. Because when we started that approach, that's when it started to really click in terms of making use of the capabilities that a phone has, right? And also making sure that it just feels right. Because now the thing is with the touchscreen, right? You can almost feel your champions. And I obviously say that in a crazy way, but if you just think about it, right? Like now you drag like an ability of your champion really on the screen, you see exactly how the champion reacts to it. It's almost to some degree more direct, the interaction with your champion. So it needed to feel super crisp. So we decided to rebuild everything. But it also gave us the opportunity to touch up a few areas of the game that, you know, as you can imagine, at that point, you know, the game being more than 10 years old on PC, that didn't hold up, you know, as well over the course of time. So we actually started to rebuild a bunch of things to, even like in terms of what champions looked like visually, to get them kind of on par with the modern for 21st century. It was kind of an opportunity as well then for us.
Yeah. No, you know, we are really proud and excited that that you guys decided to bring your game over to Galaxy Store. Tell me, are there any unique aspects or optimizations to the game that fans download from Galaxy Store?
Yes, I'm not going to bore you guys with the technical details, but at the end of it all is we wanted to make sure that no matter if you have a high-end Samsung phone or if you have, you know, a more entry-level one, that the game really gets the most out of the phone, right? That you get the smoothest possible experience.
Sure.
And that required actually really working with Samsung. They were super open to really work with us, right? And help on optimizing the engine, but also working with us on some new SDK functionality that really allowed to make sure that the fight between thermals, like how much heat is being generated on one end, but also how much power do you really put into all the components like CPU, GPU, that we always find the right balance, that no matter, you know, how heated the fight is, that your phone doesn't overheat yet still gives you the smoothest experience. And we've been working endlessly for a couple of years, you know, with everybody at Samsung. And we believe, you know, we achieved what we wanted to achieve, which is really giving you the best possible game experience on a Galaxy device.
Yeah, and knowing that, you know, we have so many different form factors with our traditional phone, as well as the Z Fold and the Z Flip, all of which can be used to play Wild Rift, correct?
Actually, in fact, I do play Wild Rift on my Fold 2.
Yes. That's great. So tell me about this relationship with Samsung. How did that first start?
It's a fun story because, you know, Samsung and Riot were thinking very similarly about the space. And that is really, how can we provide the best possible entertainment experience on the go? Right? That is true for Samsung, right, through their products, but it's also true for Riot with our games and software. So through those early conversations, we pretty quickly identified, like, it's pretty obvious for us to work together on this, right? And from there, it was all history, right? Starting to partner and really figuring out the ways on, you know, what that means for us as two companies collaborating with the sole purpose of giving gamers the best possible experience on a mobile device. And that partnership is now ongoing for like last 2-3 years.
Sure. Yeah. And that's one thing I do love, you know, working at Samsung. They really do push the partnership side of things. I mean, I've made myself totally available to the community when it comes to my areas of expertise at Samsung. And they really push that with a lot of the people here. So it's not just that, you know, we're a platform for you to deliver your content, but we want to work with you to make the experience truthfully better for all those that are using our devices and your content. So with Wild Rift being such a new game, I'm sure it is extremely important and challenging to do that initial marketing to promote your game. So tell me about some of the tools and techniques that you guys are doing to help let the community know that, hey, there is Wild Rift and it's time for you to play.
Yeah, absolutely. So in today's world, like when you think about it, you know, you have to really be where players are. You can't be as selective anymore as you might want it to be 10, 15, 20 years ago. And that really is the guiding thing for us when we thought about, you know, marketing the game and, you know, celebrating the launch of it. And specifically being a mobile game, right, what does it mean being where players are? For us, that was, you know, heavy emphasis on social media, on content creators, and just general video platforms. Because that is the core circle of, you know, how people on mobile phones consume content these days.
Sure.
So that was a very big investment of ours to really lean into that, you know, and work with the right parties. But the other thing that's so exciting is when you think about mobile is, you know, the capabilities that it brings that you weren't really able to do on a PC, even when it comes to marketing. And what I mean by that is, like, guys, a great example is, you know, using AR and VR technology. You know, on a mobile phone, it's actually pretty straightforward. So we played with it a bunch. Actually made microsites for events and launch events. We turned them into three-dimensional things you can actually walk around in and it would update.
Oh, wow.
We did 180-degree videos. So as you watch it, depending on, you know, where you were looking, you saw a different thing of the scenery and of the story being told in that video. And it's all these fun things, right, that you can start doing and creatively unlock if you embrace mobile as a platform, not only where your game is at, but also how people consume content, right? And then the other aspect, being a mobile game specifically, is, it sounds cheesy, it's mobile, right? It's on the go. Yes. People have it everywhere, even in real life. So for us, it was also an important component to figure out, well, how can we promote it where people are out there when they use a phone, right? So not just being on the phone, but in the actual real world context. So obviously with the COVID-19 situation happening, it was a little bit more tricky for us to do so. But we still were able to find, you know, arguably great and yet safe ways to do that in the real world. Like, for example, in Southeast Asia, in some markets, it's all about food, right? Like, people love food there. They'll go to street vendors, you know, just grab something and even make it a social hangout space, right? Where you just meet around a food cart.
Sure.
And we really leaned into that aspect in Southeast Asia and actually created a campaign that celebrated some of the fruit that you find in the game on the map, brought it to real life, actually created something that looked like it, but felt very specifically, I guess, different.
Sure.
And created an activation around it. And we're really proud of that one because, again, not only were we able to pull it off despite all the constraints around us, but it also was more recently recognized winning a Grand Clio for one of the best marketing experiences over the last couple of years.
Wow, that's exciting. And for those that don't know, Clio Awards are basically the Oscars when it comes to marketing and design.
Yes.
So, and I understand you also did something pretty creative with YouTube as far as an event.
So yes, we also did something YouTube, which we also won a Clio for. And that was really the concept of while people are waiting to play the game, because we were doing it in rollout stages, like one wave after the other, what can we give people in a cool interactive form to kind of experience the game without playing it? And one thing that came to mind is as part of the game, a key objective in the game is Baron Nashor, which is this massive giant worm thingy that you can slay in as a team. And we made a game on YouTube about that experience, but it was kind of a all versus one kind of experience where all players watching the stream had to come together and actually work together to, in this case, slay Baron Nashor through various inputs that they could give through chat. And whatever the chat inputs were that the community decided, something would happen on the screen in terms of fighting him with this specific attack, call different champions in for help, heal yourself, things like that. So it was kind of a massive interactive game that people played. And it was really cool to kind of, again, test the waters with what's possible with all the platforms out there.
Wow. What a great and super creative way to truthfully build a community to, you know, act as one. So all total to date, how many downloads, how many users would you say have played Wild Rift?
It's hard to say, but it's definitely high up there in the tens of millions. But I think the best number that describes, you know, when we think about League of Legends, you know, how big it is a number we just recently announced. And that was for the end of last year. We had 180 million people in a given month play, you know, a League of Legends game.
Wow.
And the majority of that is driven by Wild Rift, actually, right? Because, you know, people were waiting for having finally a mobile part of this ecosystem available to them. And that is really, you know, the promise that we delivered upon, right? Giving them something that they could proudly call League of Legends is now, you know, available on a mobile phone because it is League of Legends. It is the core game. And people paid that back to us by coming, downloading, and playing the game. And we're really proud that we were able to expand the ecosystem for our players the way we did.
That's amazing. And that is huge, especially for a franchise that just shows the longevity of the brand after all these years to still be creating new experiences for the community and seeing the community grow that big.
It's the proof point that the product lifecycle curves that they teach people during the MBAs, that they can be defied if you just really have a customer focus.
But how do you guys come up with your ideas for games?
The beauty of making video games is really, if you can dream it up, you can make it.
Sure.
And so really the creativity in your mind is kind of the limiting factor here. And because of that, inspiration can truly come from anywhere for making a game and finding like what's fun about a different experience. Being it reading a book, you know, watching just our fans talk on YouTube about something, right? Playing a board game, or just generally just sitting there in a rocking chair and, you know, thinking about like what could be better in the world. You know, truly ideas can come from anywhere. And that's the exciting thing about gaming, right? As a medium, because it's like creating these things that are interactive for people to then explore themselves and be surprised and delighted by. And because of that, you know, and our push for finding new ways to give players what they would want, and that is that more robust ecosystem, we now have invested into a pretty robust pipeline of R&D games so that visit different genres to really make sure that one day we can give as many players as possible kind of the ecosystem that they deserve.
Yeah, I love what you said about if you can dream it, you can make it a game. And that's true, because I remember the first time I picked up Cards Against Humanity. I absolutely loved playing the game. And as soon as I was done, I had a notepad and I'm like, okay, how can I make my version of Cards Against Humanity? I mean, it just was so simple, but so, so much fun. And that was true, you know, for many years. I've often come up with ideas for, you know, game boards or collectible, you know, items, even going so far to pitch some of these ideas. None of them worked out. I ended up deciding to go into tech. But yeah, I love what you said, that if you can dream it, you can make it.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? It's like, it doesn't have to always work out, right? Even just trying to see if there's something there with your idea, as crazy as it might be. Sure, there's a high chance, right? It will not work out. And it's the same for us in our R&D pipeline. Right? Just because we're starting to invest into a game, it doesn't mean that we're going to make it. Right? Because there's a high chance that as we go down that rabbit hole, that we're like, yeah, we weren't really able to find the fun. Or like, yeah, we don't really know how to make that game. It's just a possibility, right? So there are a bunch of things that are being canceled internally or put on a shelf. But the things that you learn from it probably inspire something else. And that something else might become the next big thing. It might change humanity forever beyond gaming.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because a lot of the things that we now take for granted in our world, sometimes were accidents. But people were actually trying to invent or find a different solution to a different problem. And then as a side product, they invented X. Right?
Yes.
And that is what's always keep trying.
So when it comes to like developing a game and pitching that concept, I can imagine it must be a little bit like actually pitching a movie. I mean, with storyboards, storylines, characters. I mean, games have become so involved that that's how I think it would be. But tell me, is it anything like you know, pitching an idea for a movie?
It's definitely a process because a lot of people think about making games just, hey, a bunch of people get together and just make a thing and then they release it, right? And sure, that could be a way, but probably will not give anybody the results they're looking for. And players probably would look at it and be like, what is this game? It's not fun, right? It doesn't feel right. So that's why it's really going through that process of multiple stages that kind of really stack on top of each other. And they're sequential, right? Because we want to make sure that first, the core idea of what makes that game fun potentially is really thought out. And it goes through that process and figure out like, hey, do we believe that this will be true? Then it kind of, when that is happening, goes into the next stage of like, can we actually make that game before even really making the game? Because that's the other thing. You might dream up this crazy idea, but nobody has an idea how to actually make it.
Sure.
And that would also be problematic. So that's really about figuring out all the kinks. Right? Like, so what would an animated character look like and feel like, and how much work is it actually to make it, or whatever it is, like what would this open world feel like, and what's the visual quality target we're aiming for, all these things, trying to figure out these answers to all these questions to before the game actually goes into full production. That's when you actually make the game. And again, that seems a little bit counterintuitive, right? Because people are like, well, why waste all the time at the beginning? But it's really part of the process for us to make sure that when we release a game as Riot, that players can be proud of it.
Yeah.
When they pick it up, it doesn't just feel awesome, but it really changes and provides value to their lives, right? As a gamer. We want to have that high bar, and it's a high bar. That's why not every game will make it to that pipeline. It's okay. Everybody knows that. But that's a really important aspect of it.
So how long would you say it takes to go from concept to actually a published game?
It's really depends on, you know, the genre, the type of game, even the scope of it. You can see games that are actually done in 2 years, but you can also find games that will take 5 years plus, right, to go through that pipeline. So it's really variable based on kind of the project.
Yeah, and that is quite an investment, you know, to have to forecast out like, hey, we're not going to see a return on this for another 3 to 5 years. That just shows you the commitment that Riot has.
Well, I think for Riot, it's not even that. It's not that we're thinking about, hey, you know, what's the investment for just putting a game through R&D? Because the philosophy of Riot is about that long-term value to the player ecosystem.
Sure.
That is kind of our very first way of thinking about it. So rather than thinking for us, it's like, okay, it doesn't take 2 or 5 years to put it through. It's more like, once it's out, can this be a 10 plus year game, right?
Yeah.
That really pushes the genre forward, that really changes the game experience, that really adds to our ecosystem in a long-term way and provides value through that. That's how we think about it. And that makes it a little bit different in terms of, sure, how we approach games. But again, that's how the whole belief of the company is built around that. And it actually makes for, in our eyes, for better outcomes for players.
Sure, sure. You know, there's a lot of competition out there with gaming. What has been your strategy for discoverability?
It is obviously, you know, people have choice, right?
Sure.
There's no way around that. But there are a couple of things that we try to do of really put our flag down in terms of making sure that players actively seek out Riot games. Because obviously there's the obvious answer of like, hey, you spend all this money on media, on user acquisition, right? I mean, that's a fair way of doing it. And Riot is participating in that way, right, of pushing discoverability. But there's also the other aspect, right? If you do create an environment that people cherish, right? Being in through a super recognizable IP that has depth, or through really providing highest quality entertainment options available no matter the platform, all of a sudden you get players that want to play your games, right? That actively, you know, looking for the next Riot game, not only for themselves, but even to a degree to talking to their friends about it. And that is kind of the other part to us. And actually probably the leading thing actually for us to really invest into these high quality IP driven ecosystems that gives players the best experience. And then through that kind of grow from the inside out, right? Where people who are within the ecosystem are happy to go out to their friends. You're like, hey, this is an amazing game. You should play it with me. And that is the two components for us. But as I said, the latter one being the more focused piece of it.
Yeah, and I think in another way, it's also evident how you don't have to pay to play, that there is an opportunity for people who just want to pick it up and have a little fun with it. But yet, obviously, you know, you can generate revenue through Wild Rift. So what has been your strategy for generating revenue?
It all goes back to when it comes to how do we make money? Because yes, we do have to make money one way or the other. Because our philosophy is we want money to reinvest back into the ecosystem.
Sure.
For us, we don't want to just do it in a way that feels bad. That's like our big thing. Like if somebody gives us money, we want a player to feel good about it because they got great value. And that means we don't want to partake in some of the more predatory monetization models that exist out there. So as gamers, for example, you know, you hate it when there are these energy systems that limit the amount of time you can actually play a game, or you have to like refill your energy or whatever to, you know, play another match or something like that. We don't do any of that. We don't want to limit how many times you can play. We also don't want to sell anything that gives somebody an unfair advantage in terms of making them stronger, right? Or having all of a sudden different abilities that you don't have access to. So it's really about, you know, allowing people to monetize, to do buy things that are more appearance-based, right? More vanity-based, because that way it's about them deepening their almost relationship with their favorite champion, with their favorite character. And that doesn't have really any impact on somebody else playing with them in the sense of being unfair, but instead gives, you know, our players actually more diversity for the champion that they already know and love and more different appeal, and almost celebrating it with them, that they have gone so deep, you know, with the champions. And that's really the majority of, you know, for us and how we think about monetization.
Yeah.
And that is really the focus for us.
Now, you know, the user experience on mobile is different than it is on PC. What were some of the challenges that you guys faced when it came to designing a mobile game?
It's very different, right? And that's why we really, really had to rebuild it in terms of design. Is you have a smaller screen, right?
Sure.
But also completely very different input mechanics and how you steer, right, a champion. So really rethinking all of that was a really big part of the prototyping phase of the game, to redo even some of the champion mechanics to better fit the, you know, mobile environment, to again really make the best out of it. Or another great example for the design experiences, you know, average game on PC is probably 30 minutes to play League of Legends, but nobody wants to spend 30 minutes, you know, into a heated match on a phone. Actually, for people that think about phone more so as like more bite-sized experience that they can have on average.
Sure.
So that was a big thing for us. It's like, well, as well, from a design perspective, it's like, oh, how do we bring it down to, let's say, 15 minutes, right, to make it more bite-sized without losing the core experience that people know and love from PC. So that was like, this is an example for, you know, how we thought about the design problems to solve going to mobile. But again, to really make use of mobile, not just to solve it for the sake of it, but to really leverage, you know, what mobile is giving you. Then when it comes to publishing, it's also very different. We self-publish, you know, the game on PC. That obviously is only means that, like, you know, we use our own tools and everything.
Sure.
But as you think about mobile, you know, we work with great partners like Samsung to get the game out, to make sure that people have a great, convenient, and safe environment to get the game from. So there, it's actually for us learning all the ins and outs, right, of the tools and the capabilities, and even working, you know, with Samsung to figure out if there's any functionality that might be missing that would be cool to make it an even better experience for players. So that was actually also, you know, a big switch for us that we had to learn and really invest into to teach ourselves what better looks like.
Sure.
And then also the marketing aspects of it all as well. You can't just copy whatever you're doing on PC from a marketing front and just call it day, right? We're like, yeah, we did it. Cool. Because it's not only the way, again, people consume media slightly different, but it's also, again, going back to opportunity, because people might notice that, you know, the game is actually called League of Legends Wild Rift. It's not just called League of Legends or League of Legends Mobile.
Yeah.
It also looks slightly different, feels slightly different. And that was purpose, because as we think about Wild Rift within the ecosystem that we've built, Wild Rift more so is kind of to inspire the next generation of League of Legends fans. So what does it then mean for us as people consider playing us or not?
Yeah.
Are there changes that we should be making to be more appealing? And that's what we did. Because also the game is slightly different in some detailed mechanics. So we didn't want to mislead our core fans as well by completely saying, hey, they're exactly the same, because they're not.
Yeah.
Core fans will immediately be like, hey, this ability, Eric, that one is different. So don't call this exactly League of Legends, because, you know, it's slightly off. And that's awesome, because our fans are as dedicated. So we also didn't want to mislead them. Hence, also part of the marketing experience being slightly different. Be like, hey, no, this is League of Legends Wild Rift, which is still totally deserving of the name League of Legends, because
yeah,
it is that core experience. But it's still slightly enough different to give it that different tone.
Yeah. Now, you know, one of the things that stood out for me when I first played the game was the music. I mean, it was extremely cinematic. So tell me a little bit about the music of League of Legends Wild Rift.
Yeah. It's so interesting what music can do to an overall experience. I remember we had a play test at some point, and there wasn't a music. It was like a bug. It was like before release. And it was so interesting to me because it felt so wrong. But initially I couldn't pinpoint what's wrong with it, because I actively didn't notice that the music was missing. But it really fell off. I was like, what's going on? Like, this doesn't feel right. And then eventually people were like, oh yeah, the music is not playing in any of this. And I'm like, oh, Yeah. Now I feel it. Right? And that's the thing. It's, you know, most of the time people don't really think actively about music, yet it plays such a big part to connect you better to the experience that you are having.
Sure.
How can music be part of that emotional connection to what you're doing? Right? So it's not just some fireworks going off on the screen, but that also that you feel it. If something is on the line, the music should help tell you that, at least subconsciously, like, hey, something's on the line. But the same so as like if you go back to, you know, your home base, your fountain in the game, the music probably should tell you like, hey, take a breather, right? It's okay. Like, this is a safe space, right? And that's really how to think about music, right? Like making that like a way to connect better with the experience, even though people don't actively notice it.
And all of the music that you're hearing in today's podcast is from the League of Legends Wild Rift soundtrack. So now that you've worked with Samsung so closely on bringing your game to the Galaxy Store, what advice can you give developers that would like to do the same?
Yeah, I mean, being on mobile for me, right, is about reaching massive audiences that use their phone to really define who they are as a gamer. And when you think about it that way, Samsung is a massive part of it. Right? It's one of the largest phone manufacturers in the world, dedicated to creating the best possible experience on the go. And that lens kind of, at least for me, thinks about it as like, and it's a no-brainer, right, to be on the Galaxy Store. Especially, you know, as we found out through our experience, that the extra work required to do so is actually very minimal. So it's a great value add, right, to reaching, you know, more players and eventually more fans of your products through, again, a lens of quality and pushing the experience forward. So I guess the short answer is just do it.
Wonderful. That's great. So tell me, what is in the future for Riot Games?
Our CEO, Niccolo, he just recently actually shared a blog post about that on riotgames.com that kind of spilled the beans a little bit of, you know, our next 5+ year journey that we're taking on as Riot Games. And because for us, it's really about that expansion of the ecosystem, right? How can we, again, make it better to be a player? How can we find better ways for people to express fandom? How can we give them more experiences beyond the ones that we've already provided to give them a more diverse way of interacting with Riot Games, with League of Legends IP, or maybe even new IPs. And so there's a long blog post where he talks about all these things in detail, but that's kind of really what you can expect, right? For us to keep chasing, you know, our players and their needs, that you'll see us invest in our existing games, but also many new ones across many new genres. We will really push esports further beyond our games, because we believe that esports is just an integral part of the entertainment environment in the future. Right? So we'll try to innovate and push forward there, but also explore different mediums. I mean, we've just done it with Arcane that released on Netflix just several months ago, but expect us to do more things that are not just games. Again, the pursuit of providing super rich ecosystem that people can be proud of as a fan.
Yeah, so Arcane is this new animated series on Netflix. I actually watched a little bit of it. It is hauntingly beautiful. Tell us a little bit about that.
You might think about like, why is Riot making a TV show, right? And again, it goes back to, you know, not everybody has time to play games all the time, yet they're still a fan of thing that you made maybe many years ago. So how can we give them like a connection to their fandom back without telling them, hey, play this new game or play this old game? And that's where it is really about entering different mediums that have a different accessibility bar. In this case, TV, right? So for us, though, and through that lens, it was very important to make Arcane as kind of that first statement in our journey to expand the universe really beyond just games, for people to think about the League of Legends IP and ecosystem as kind of this multimedia experience that, you know, crosses all these different mediums. And this was the first kind of statement that we made. And it goes really into, right, the story of some of our most beloved champions and their background. But it was also made in a way that if you are a fan of League of Legends and you couldn't really convince others why you're so crazy about League of Legends, that you could give them that show. Uh-huh. I'd be like, hey, let's watch it together. In an attempt for you to explain, hey, this is why League of Legends is awesome, because you can watch it without any context of the League of Legends world.
Sure.
And that was also important to us, to give our fans kind of a invitation that they could send to their friends and loved ones and be like, hey, you want to share my passion? Here's a different way how we can do that.
Yeah. So it really is obvious that Riot Games has become an entertainment company, not just a gaming company. How big, how many employees work for Riot Games?
At this point, we're well past 3,000 and still growing quickly. Because as you can imagine, right, it's creating all these dreams, making them turn into reality for our fans, you know, requires a lot of people. And we're not shy of investing into those impossible dreams come true across all of our offices, right? It's not just, here in LA. We have offices all around the world. And as part of our next evolution of Riot, we'll receive more offices and games being made all around the world and experiences being made all around the world.
Sure.
To really, also capitalize on, this isn't just one type of gamer. Depending on where you go around the world, what it means to be a gamer also does look and feel different. So that is also something that we have to really think about as we expand into, the future of what Riot can look like.
Yeah, yeah. So people listening to the podcast, if they're interested in working for Riot Games, so what's the best way for them to learn about how to apply for a position at Riot Games?
Yeah, I mean, you can find us on almost all the networks you can think of. But generally, the two ones I do recommend is either go to riotgames.com, where you can learn more about Riot, but also, what we're up to and, what positions we have open. But also on things like LinkedIn, right, where we all have our own presence, and you can also check out, blog posts there, and as well as our openings, and also even connect with Rioters and ask them about their experiences.
That's great. And I'll be sharing all of the URLs in the show notes for not just Riot Games, but also for Wild Rift and your social handles. So with diversity and inclusion being such an important aspect of our society right now, tell me, what is Riot Games doing related to D&I?
Yeah, it's a very important question, Tony. And for Riot, there are two lenses that I describe to people on how we are thinking about diversity and inclusion. The first part is obviously the one that people probably think first and foremost of, which is Riot as an employer, right? And, me talking from my personal experience here, the way that, Riot has invested over the last couple of years into that space in terms of time, with, money and just general resourcing has been phenomenal. I've never seen, such a heavy investment being made to do the right thing. Right? Because yes, it did require a wake up moment for us as a company, but that moment was really turned an opportunity. Right, to make it better to be a Rioter, to work at Riot Games. So now, there's not just a D&I team that exists, but also, what they do and how they impact the company is part of all the processes all around, right, to ensure that no matter what it might be, that Riot is a welcoming and fair environment for everybody. Right? And that is an extreme big investment. And I'm actually really proud to have seen the reaction to arguably, the not so great moments that we had in the past. So
sure.
That makes me actually pretty proud based on my experience. But the other part also that sometimes people forget when it comes to diversity and inclusion is Riot as a game creator, right? Because with that, you kind of have a responsibility as creatives to create experiences for millions and millions of players around the world that kind of allow them to relate, or even better said, that feel seen, right, through the things that you make.
Sure.
Because you can quickly fall into a pit trap where, you just create the same things over and over again that fit a worldview of a specific group, but makes other people feel left out. Yeah. And that's part of the responsibility that you have as a game creator. So as part of the development process to promote diversity and inclusion through that content that you make. And a very recent example actually is Valorant, our shooter that we have, because they're one of the most recent champions that just launched, or agents it's called, is actually a female character inspired by Filipino culture. Because we want to make sure that, you know, if you are, you know, not just a woman, but in the Philippines, which arguably, if you think about gaming, especially, you know, often completely overseen and overlooked, that if you are a Filipino gamer, you're like, yeah, I feel seen.
Sure.
Right? Because there's now this agent in this game that, you know, celebrates my culture. And I'm proud of that. And that's an example, right, for how we as game makers also have some form of responsibility to promote diversity in our culture.
Yeah, I love what you said, not only about how Riot is taking diversity and inclusion within the company, but then your impact and your influence outside of the company into our society. That is absolutely wonderful. So tell me, what do you do outside of all of your work at Riot? What do you do for fun?
What I do for fun? Getting to learn anything about new cars or old cars. So I spent an unhealthy amount reading and watching videos about it.
So what was your first car and what is your dream car?
My first car was an older Audi A4 Avant, so station wagon. Because in Europe, we love our station wagons, which I know for Americans are like, yeah, don't like it.
Of course.
Dream car is really hard because there's so many amazing cars. And sometimes I actually fantasize about it. Like, if I just pick one, like, which one would it be? And probably right now, my dream car is a Porsche 356A, which is a very old school Porsche. But in terms of just the body lines, you know, just amazing. Unfortunately, I never had a chance yet to drive one. It probably drives amazing.
That is so funny you said that, because I was waiting for my turn and mine is also the Porsche 356. Ever since I saw the movie Top Gun and you see that beautiful Porsche just riding off into the sunset, I've always wanted to get my hands on one. Funny story, my wife, she had asked me when we were dating, where do you see yourself, you know, later on in life when you retire? And I said, I see myself with a Porsche 356. So hopefully when that day comes and I do decide to retire, she'll let me get that dream car.
If not, through some amazing fortune, I get one. I'll call you up and then we can ride together in the sunset.
Take me for a spin. But hey, let's stay away from that LA traffic.
That's true. Yes. We'll definitely have to go outside of LA. Yes.
Hey, Eric, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the podcast. It was wonderful to hear not only about yourself, but the great things that are happening over at Riot Games.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. And yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me.
Looking to start creating for Samsung? Download the latest tools to code your next app. Or get software for designing apps without coding at all. Sell your apps to the world on the Samsung Galaxy Store. Check out developer.samsung.com today and start your journey with Samsung.
The Samsung Developers Podcast is hosted by Tony Moreland and produced by Jeannie Sue.